How are you doing, Peter? Thanks for doing this. It's very important that people hear what's going on.
I'm doing well. Thanks for joining me. Deborah Richardson says hello.
Okay, that's great.
That's
great.
I asked you to come on this morning because I got an email from a friend, and they were educating me about this conference that was coming up in Illinois, and the conference was to bring the conference was between Homeland Security and the USDA, and basically the gist of this message was that the farmers who would be affected by what's being decided in this conference weren't being allowed to come to the conference. And so could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So let me just do one little beginning to this. There are bills in Congress right at the moment that, if they're not stopped, will be the end of organic farming, independent farming, seed banking, farmers markets, CSAs, the whole shebang that people are interested in. They are being billed as food safety bills, but they are basically a coup by the industrial side to take over the food supply and all farming in the United States, and they need to be stopped. Okay, so what I'm going to tell you about those Illinois meetings, is only a piece of how they're operating. Okay, it just gives you an insight into how they're operating.
They being this is when you say
they being the industrials, they being the USDA, the industrials and the industrial side, the agribusiness, the major corporations, Monsanto, mm-hmm. Cargill, ADM, the big surveillance companies that are behind the food safety, also part of the food safety stuff, because there's a fortune to be made in insisting that every animal in the country be tagged, every farm animal in the country, and there are 36 I'm not sure, be tagged with a global tracking tag, even though they're already tagged. All the tagging is already done. All of it already exists. But if the government imposes this, there's millions and millions to be made in it. Anyway, so the these meetings in Illinois are sort of an example of how things are operating. Vilsack said that there was going to be transparency. Obama said there was going to be transparency. But the USDA is meeting with Homeland Security in six closed meetings in Illinois, Southern Illinois, where they are going to practice or design, or I'm not sure exactly what term to use, how they will depopulate an area of animals in case there is a disease outbreak, in case there's bioterrorism, in case there's whatever it is they're going to use as a justification for eliminating heritage breeds of animals around the country.
Before you go any further, could you explain who Vilsack is to the listeners?
Oh, sure. I'm sorry. Vilsack is the head of the USDA. He's the head of the Department of Agriculture, Secretary of Agriculture. And he's a very close crony of Monsanto. He had the governor of Iowa. And when he was there, I think about 70,000 small farmers went out of business, while CAFOs, the big confined animal feeding operations, went into effect. He pushes biotech very, very hard, and very close to the biotech companies, and he's won awards for that. And he also is the person who came up with the idea. This is his brainchild, and they're called Monsanto laws, but it turns out he invented them. He came up with the idea for them. They're laws that remove communities' rights to decide what is done in their community in terms of agriculture, what's planted, what's anything that's done there. So I believe that New York already has one, which would mean that if Monsanto wanted to come in and plant industrial chemical crops, these are the new, GMO insanity, if they wanted to plant drug crops or industrial chemical crops, and the community voted 100% against it, they would not have the right to, that would make any difference. They're called democracy preemption laws. Basically, the democracy is already gone, and those decisions will be made by a committee at the state level and not by any community. In the same way, they could impose CAFOs, these confined animal feeding operations that are disgusting. They just, you know, they...
That's like what we think of when we think of factory farming and these...
Absolutely, where animals are, you know, huge numbers of animals kept inside in cages and you know, millions of chickens together and you know, hogs in you know, very tight, confined quarters in these giant buildings, and then they have the contamination issues from those, separate from the torture of the animals. The contamination issues are huge, and groundwater that's destroyed by the excrement they have, because they have all this contamination, all this excrement they have to get rid of, and it's mostly contaminated also by, you know, the antibiotics the animals get, the pesticide in their feed, the hormones, the everything.
Before we Before you go any further, again, just to clarify to the listeners, when you say drug crops, you're not talking about marijuana, cocaine. Drug crops are these crops have been genetically engineered, something like corn, to have something like a spermicide being grown in the corn, or something like another pharmaceutical drug, right?
That's right. Thank you for that. I mean, if growing marijuana would be harmless to a community, and you'd have no problem about cross-pollination, but if you're growing, for example, any kind of drug, actually they're trying to turn crops into drugs, into pharmaceutical drugs, that's right, or they're also trying to do industrial chemical crops. So that if you could imagine the cross-pollination issues. And besides that, for any people that have allergies where they're dealing with pollen, where the pollen would actually be genetically engineered industrial chemicals or be genetically engineered drugs they were taking into their bodies. But communities wouldn't have the right to keep those out of their, to keep them out of their community. This is an example sort of how serious and severe the issue of taking over has gotten, all right, in terms of actually undermining democracy in order to make sure they can. So did that answer it for you, Peter?
Yes.
Okay.
So that's a good start for us.
Thank you for asking me specifically about the drugs, because I didn't even think about marijuana as a drug crop, though.
Right.
So, yeah,
well,
thank you. Yeah.
There's a lot of these terms that we'll be putting out that people who aren't familiar with these issues may need to a little more clarification on. How did you get started in this? You know, when did your awareness about these problems begin, and in what way?
Very accidentally, I watched a PBS News Hour segment by Fred DeSamlazaro. It was just on the nightly news, and it was about a company named Monsanto, which I really didn't know anything about, that they had hired Bollywood actors, these Indian actors, to sell genetically engineered seeds to illiterate farmers in Maharashtra in India, and that the seeds needed irrigation. But the area they were selling it in was only a rain-fed area. There was no irrigation, but they were selling it anyhow. And the farmers were, you know, very attached to those actors. They were illiterate. These were people that were, you know, like family members to them, because people they'd grown up with. And they were told by these actors that they were going to get rich, that everything was going to be great. So they took out these, for them, really huge loans. The seeds were 1,000% more expensive than what they were normally using. And they didn't realize they also were going to need pesticides. They had to take out more loans for pesticides and fertilizers. And then the crops failed. And and that's true across India, separate from the irrigation issue. The BT cotton in India has had just huge problems, and now it's got all kinds of bug problems that that with I don't know, invasive bug issues that had not existed before in those areas in India. Anyway, so the crops failed, and in order, the farmers then wanted to collect the seeds off their own land and try again, which is farmers, that's what farmers since the beginning of time have always done, is that you collect, you know, you grow your crop. At the end of the season, the plants produce seed. When they finish fruiting or whatever they're going to do, then you collect the seeds and you save them for the next year. But Monsanto's stuff is patented, and you're not allowed to collect your own. You're not allowed to collect the seeds. So the farmers had to go into deeper debt, and they ended up, nothing worked, and they ended up committing suicide. This is by often drinking Monsanto pesticides. So I saw that one segment, and I was just so horrified. Anyway, so then I started finding out more that was going on in this country. I found out about Monsanto. I found out about the Clinton connection to Monsanto when Hillary Clinton was running, and I was particularly disturbed. She was interested in a centralized food safety department. That really worried me because I had a centralizing the FDA and USDA, because by then I knew enough to know how very corrupt both agencies were. And Monsanto in each agency, how close the Clintons were to Monsanto, and that this would just give them extraordinary power, I mean, really frightening power. Anyway, so I became more and more involved and found out about NAIS, and which I can talk about later, but and what was happening to our own farmers. Mm-hmm. And now the bills that are in Congress, they are basically the Clinton plan to centralize the USDA and FDA.
The amount of farmers in India, too, it wasn't just like a few farmers who this happened to where they forfeited, they went in debt, and then they committed suicide. It's more than thousands. How many farmers?
108, and this number does not include women farmers, tenant farmers, farmers whose fathers owned the land. So if any of those people are killed themselves, they wouldn't be counted by the government. But by government statistics alone, 182,000 Indian farmers have committed suicide in the last 10 years, which is since basically Clinton and the IMF and the World Bank forced India open to Monsanto and industrial agriculture and the big ag companies and those methods. And in Maharashtra, which is a state where only Monsanto has been operating, the percent of suicides compared to the rest of the country is like 38%. They've in one state in India, they have 38% of the deaths, and they appear to be these suicides appear to be the largest recording mass suicide in human history. Okay, so and they're continuing. And the farmers there are committing suicide at the rate of one every half hour, and 8 million farmers have already left the land. And when I first got interested in this, or when I first heard that show, at that point only 6 million had left the land. So only in the last year, I mean in a year and a half, it's been 1 million, it's been 2 million more, and more than 20,000 more suicides. So which is part of what the urgency I feel. Mm-hmm. This is the severity of what's happening to small farmers around the world is very real. And now it's happening in this country, and this is an effort to get people to wake up and realize how much is at risk. But most people are just completely unaware. They've heard stuff, oh, there are food safety bills in Congress, and they think, oh, that's good. We need food safety because of the peanut stuff and because so much stuff is contaminated. It's true that so much stuff is contaminated. But these food safety bills have nothing to do with dealing with that contamination at all.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so.
Let me just mention to the listeners, if you're out there listening to this program and you have any questions or comments for us here, you can give me a call and ask a question to Lynn or myself. The number here is area code 315-859-4200. That's 315-859-4200.
And your listeners, I'm assuming your listeners are New York, mostly New
yes.
York listeners, they should realize that at least one of these bills was put in by New York representatives, Rosa DeLauro, whose husband works for Monsanto, has worked for the Clintons and worked for Monsanto. For Nadler, I don't know his connections, but he's very connected to the Clintons. And then I'm not sure who Bordalo actually is in Guam, it's a different country, so not in the same state. But at least, but Rosa DeLauro is one of the main people doing this, inserting these bills, and so people should be aware of that. This is in New York, and also because Clinton was your senator, this is coming out of New York. A lot of this is coming out of New York. And you have the preemption law that I was talking about. New York, I believe, has that preemption law already. You already don't have your full democratic rights there because of Monsanto and basically how corrupted the state legislature would be that they would have passed that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so...
I know there's a lot of GM corn being grown here. You see the Pioneer brand and that biotech kind of symbol they have on their product. I went to out in Seneca Falls. They had a farm days, and I went out to see what it was all about. And I saw Monsanto there, and there was a number of different farming groups that were giving out literature about their genetically engineered seeds that they were selling to farmers.
Wow, so Farm Days is really corporate biotech rather than farmers.
Mm-hmm.
That's, yeah. People might like to know, too, speaking of corn, and, you know, this is because Monsanto owns almost all the DNA, or quote owns. I don't believe that anybody can own life like that, but they supposedly own almost all the DNA to corn and to soy in this country. And in the Midwest, they are, I don't know if people know what seed cleaners are. They are probably the most essential person for sustainable agriculture, either seed cleaners or seed cleaning equipment. And what that is, I talked about, is the Indian farmers tried to collect seed off their own land. In order to collect seed, if you've got a lot of crops and a lot of acreage, in order to get the seeds and collect them and store them for the next year, you either have to pay a lot of people. This is what used to happen. Either have a really large family or pay a lot of people to go out and by hand pick each of the seeds off the plants. Or you take them to a seed cleaner or a seed cleaner comes with their own equipment. And they run the plants through this equipment, and in a very short order, they can clean the plants of the seeds and give you back your own seeds. And those seeds would cost you, doing that would cost you a third of what it would cost you to go buy the seeds. But it would cost you about a tenth what it would cost you to buy genetically engineered seeds, which are three or four times more expensive than regular seeds. So in the Midwest right now, having already bought up almost all the seed companies so that there's no normal seed, corn or soy seed available. Monsanto is now picking off seed cleaners. They're getting rid of the seed cleaners. And they've already done it in Pilot Grove, Missouri. They've done it in Indiana. They got rid of a guy named Mopar who was a seed cleaner. And now they're doing it in Illinois. And they're doing it with a guy named Steve Hixon, H-I-X-O-N.
Mm-hmm.
And they did it. It looks like his office got broken into, and he thinks his record book got gone through. because he found it in his truck where he doesn't normally leave it. And it's also possible they put a GPS tracking device on his equipment, because every single one of the 200 to 400 farmers he cleaned seed for, within a 2-day period, were all even though they live in extremely isolated areas across 6 counties in southern Illinois, every single one of them was had 3 men, and the people were describing them as no neck, having no necks, like thugs, come onto their property and threaten them about cleaning seed, which they were saying that the seeds were genetically engineered seeds, and that Hixson had no right to clean them, and that they were going to be sued. And then I heard too, it turns out they didn't just go into their property. At least in some cases, these 3 guys would corner the farmer and shove him up against his equipment as part of this really like mafia tactics in order to take over. So Hixson, within a 2-day period, got phone calls from every single one of the farmers he had cleaned seed for. And they were also, they'd been told that he had turned them in, or that neighbors had turned them in. Mm-hmm. So Monsanto's managed to make a 6-county area completely paranoid, people not speaking to each other, people that had been friends for ages not speaking to each other. Hixson walks down the street, people won't talk to him. And a Monsanto person called it, they laughingly called this rural cleansing, that what they were doing was rural cleansing. And in 2006, Monsanto made $160 million on these kind of extortion schemes, because what happens is, like, for example, one of those farmers, at least that we know of for sure, has been sued for $400,000. Okay, now whether or not his seeds were, whether he'd signed any contract or not, whether or not he knew that he couldn't do what, you know, have Hixson clean his seed, whether or not Hixson knew that the seeds were genetically engineered, because they look the same. Mm-hmm. He sued, and these farmers get sued, and they have no ability to go to court. The court cases end up, in any case, in St. Louis, which is where Monsanto is. And when Mopar went to court there, he said the very first thing the judge said, first thing out of their mouth, was that they were honored to have a fine company like Monsanto in their courtroom. Okay, and he lost that case. He lost that case, right? So even if they don't, so that's trying to go to court. And when you go, you're up against many lawyers. So you have to hire some little local lawyer to try and defend you against against one of the largest corporations in the world.
I think another article of yours said that Monsanto has 75 lawyers.
They have a $10 million budget and a 75-person staff to locate to do the sort of stuff they're doing with Hixson and to sue people. And they've even used helicopters to fly over people's land to see whether or not, like, if people had gotten genetically engineered seeds and they quit using them, mm-hmm. but even a single volunteer plant comes up, mm-hmm. that's the same, I mean, that they didn't, you know, they couldn't help it, the plant just came up on its own, mm-hmm. they can still be sued. Right, and for the price and for the cost of the entire crop, right, that they would lose the cost of the entire crop and be sued in addition to that. So it's
outrageous.
Not an easy thing to explain the extent of the threat here by Monsanto and by these other companies. I mean, I can tell you about Cargill too. Cargill, which is one of the companies that's behind this, quote, food safety bill. I happened to speak to someone this weekend who had worked at Cargill. This was just an accidental thing, and that I met this person. And what they said was that they would work in, you know, really high rubber boots, and they would be standing in blood almost to their knees doing the slaughter, you know, working on taking apart the carcasses of these animals. And they said that you would often hit these pockets where fecal material would just spray out, cover you. sprang out all over the walls, all over the floor, I mean, everywhere. And they said also that when coming down the line, as these carcasses were coming down the line, that you would know in advance that really that some really infected animal was coming because of the stench. And then when the carcass got to you, there'd be these giant green pus pockets on the animal that they would then cut off. And then before they worked on another animal, they would just dip the knife, and it would be an air knife, dip it in really, really hot water.
A what kind of knife?
An air knife.
Never heard
it's like a 7-pound. It sounds like it's like a electric carving knife, that kind of thing.
Okay.
So maybe the air part is just run by.
Okay, and pneumatic.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Because a lot of vibration. I mean, this person actually had to stop eventually because it just arm damage. And so lots of illegal aliens. They said there's just huge numbers of illegal aliens that they use. And when those people break down physically, then they just bring in more. Okay, so, and then they said they'd really love to be a USDA inspector because those people come through in their white coats and with their name USDA on the coat with a clipboard, marking everything okay. So Cargill is one of the companies that's behind the, quote, food safety bills. And the food safety bills do nothing about the slaughterhouses and the source of any contamination. They do nothing about the source. They're only about taking over control of farms and inserting these tracing. You know, they say, oh, we're going to trace back to the source of, you know, we'll trace back to where if there's any animal diseases or whatever. It's nonsense because no animal in this country goes to slaughter that isn't already tagged. And not only tagged, but with a bar-coded paper taped to them, right, applied to them, which is how the farmer gets paid. It's how the farmer gets paid. It's how the transport company gets paid, okay? And it's all barcoded, and it all goes in already, and that's separate from the ear tags and all the paperwork that already exists, multiple layers of paperwork. So that already exists, but there's none of that makes a difference anyway because everything is stripped off when there's slaughter. There is no way after an animal is slaughtered to trace back to anything. So the idea that, you know, if you got infected meat, you could trace back to the farm where the infection came from is complete baloney. And if before the slaughter, if there was something wrong with the animal and you wanted to trace back, it would be instantaneous. We've always had that system. And the problem is not coming from the farms. The problem is coming from the industrial side, from these giant confined animal feeding operations. And none of those, they're not going to clean. This is not about cleaning those up. It's not about cleaning up the slaughterhouses. Okay? The industrial system has ceased. They've reduced the inspections since the last Clinton food safety plan, which was HACCP, and I wish I should have memorized what it stands for, hazard something something point. It's a big international global system, which is exactly what these food safety plans are. They are an intensification of globalization. So right now, while we're all having our entire lives stolen out from under us because of NAFTA and all the globalized dropping of regulations that all serve the financial institutions and the multinational corporations, this is the same thing happening on the food side now. The other Clinton plan was also Monsanto-driven, and what it did is it was supposed to be for food safety, but it centralized. It basically set very, very, very intense standards for what had to be done in any meat processing plant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But not that all the standards actually had to do with safety, but it set these very high standards that most of the local meat processors could not meet. They just were beyond their capacity. They didn't have the money to build the system that was required. So in Kansas alone, for example, 72 local meat processors went out of business, though they had never had a single problem. And those meat processors, the local ones, means that animals wouldn't have suffered long transport to be before they are killed. It would also mean that you would know exactly where you're, any, if there had been an outbreak of any kind of contamination, if, you know, people had gotten sick anywhere, you would know because it came from that processor, and that processor all dealt locally. So it would be very contained because it was a decentralized system. Once it was put into place, though, that's what centralized everything. And inspections immediately dropped. This is, again, Clinton, and this was also a Monsanto plant. So the Clintons are now behind two of the biggest fake food safety programs ever, and the first one has already showed that it wiped out really good decentralized local control over food safety. And the ones in the Congress right now, we already know that they're going to destroy farmers because these are, quote, harmonized with European laws, because that's the idea. Same thing was true with HACCP, that they're international laws being imposed on the U.S., so we fit into a giant system. Smart grid is also part of that. This is all a smart grid taking over everything, controlling everything. It makes it very easy for the multinationals to control food and to get rid of farmers. We already know what these laws will do because already in the EU, identical laws have wiped out 60% of Polish farmers. And that's only so far. Okay? So already 60% of Polish farmers are gone. And that was a country that was enormously rich in farmers. It was a wonderful country in terms of the numbers of farmers there, small farmers all over. And a country is safe democratically. Jefferson said that a democracy is based on how many independent farmers, on having a country full of independent farmers. So that's where we're heading, and that's what these bills are about. And Clinton, this is the Clintons' very deep connection to Monsanto. They've had this connection ever since Hillary Clinton worked in a law firm in Arkansas when they were down in Arkansas. And that law firm, the Rose Law Firm, represents Monsanto, Tyson's, Walmart. And they got a lot of favors there. And as soon as he went into office, he gave favors back to Tyson's and to Monsanto. Tyson's, he immediately dropped and significantly dropped all contamination standards for poultry. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And in Arkansas, when he was in Arkansas, the contamination of rivers in Arkansas under Bill Clinton was a scandal that they really worked hard to contain before he ran for president. Right, because already what he did in Arkansas to contamination standards, or he just let them, let's just say he let everything go, right? He did not control that at all. And then for Monsanto, he appointed a Monsanto lawyer, a lead lawyer for Monsanto to head the FDA, our Food and Drug Administration, was run by Monsanto. And that's when the very first genetically engineered product ever approved by the FDA was approved. The beginning, really, of genetic engineering in this country, I mean, in terms of it coming out into the food system. And it was RBGH, which is bovine growth hormone, and which doctors were already saying that there was a strong link, there would be a link to breast cancer, and there's now a 7 times increased risk of breast cancer from RBGH, and I think it's 4 times for prostate cancer and increased risk for colon cancer. And I was in a dorm with Hillary Clinton in college and have children and went through a number of years trying to protect my kids from some hormone I had heard about, but it was really, you could not find where, you know, what was which milks, which ice cream, which yogurt, which cheeses had it. It was this huge effort to try and figure it out. And to think that this person that I knew was responsible for that, because they would not label anything that was genetically engineered. And so the only way you could get around that, if you even knew that such a thing as RBGH existed and thought it might be a threat to your family, would be to buy things that were organic. That was your only protection. But Bill Clinton tried to have the organic labeling, organic definition changed to include genetic engineering, cloned animals, irradiated meat, and sewage sludge as organic fertilizer.
Mm-hmm.
The USDA got the reaction to that was 20 times larger than they'd ever had to any other USDA proposal, and they backed off. And they backed off, though, with Monsanto saying, pull back. This is on the Internet. You can find it. Telling them to pull back, they would come at it in another way. They'd come at it later.
Mm-hmm.
And they certainly are coming at it now, later, and more cleverly, because now they're coming at it as a, not just as a fake label, but as a food safety issue, the whole thing that everything is being taken over.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so.
I did find the HACCP. And it says hazardous analysis critical control points is what the acronym stands for.
It sounds scary, doesn't it? Like they're really going to go after everything dangerous.
Yeah.
And the bill that Rosa DeLauro introduced is called Trace Agricultural Contamination Everywhere. They like to do this. They like to make people think that there's terror out there. Okay, the more scared people are, the easier it is to insert these bills.
Mm-hmm.
All right, it's exactly the same with terrorism. You know, if you're scared enough, then they can do the Patriot Act. They can get these other things through. It works exactly the same way, only it's with diseases.
I was reading Naomi Klein's book, The Shock Doctrine, and she's talking about these different firms and places like England that are selling security equipment like surveillance cameras and things like that.
Yeah.
And so they don't care if their stuff is effective. They just want people to be scared and buy the product because they're going to make a lot of money off of it. They don't care, you know, what happens to people who are wrongly accused. They don't care about people's privacy rights. All they care about is selling a product, and it sounds very similar to NAIS and what the people who are producing these micro tracking devices, would they be profiting off of, you know, having every farm animal in the country and pet or hobby animal be chipped with these? It's just a big market for them.
It's exactly right. It's an immense market, and if you realize that more animals are being born, it's a market that has continuing, and it would be government mandated. Imagine such a market, okay, for more and more and more of whatever it is you're selling. The chipping equipment doesn't work if the weather's cold. That's one thing for the global tracking. It doesn't work at all. They fall out. The ones that are inserted into the animal cause cancer. And like I said, it's a ridiculously redundant system that doesn't even do what people are told it's going to do. They just hear, oh, disease, track the disease. And they don't understand that the animals are already tracked, and that once the animal's slaughtered and you're dealing with meat at that point, there's no way to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Your real issue in any case is after the slaughter or at the slaughter, and I was describing the slaughter methods, okay? And compare that to there's a guy with a local slaughterhouse in Georgia that he just put together and cost a lot of money. I mean, these are very, very hard to get approval for and hard to get the money for. In the USDA, in these big slaughterhouses, 400 animals an hour are slaughtered 24 hours a day. Okay, and they get, I was told by this person who worked at Cargill, that they get pretty upset when they don't have more animals standing outside waiting to come into the building. At this guy's place, and I think this would have been typical in these smaller slaughterhouses, they slaughter between 10 and 20 animals in a day, in the entire day.
Uh-huh.
And it's done with normal, with regular knives, and it's done with by people that are skilled butchers.
Uh-huh.
So you're not talking fecal material, you know, going everywhere, and you're not talking infected animals. These are animals that are all grass-fed, healthy, very healthy animals. Okay, so you're not talking diseased animals and contamination.
Mm-hmm.
But it is these giant slaughterhouses. Oh, actually, that's a good point for people. everybody, lots and lots of people have heard of Upton Sinclair's book, The Jungle, which was sort of the beginning of government regulation over the packing industry. But what people, I think, have never thought about is that that was only about industrial contamination and industrial methods. Across the country, there were already butchers and small processing plants. And Upton Sinclair did not write about them. There was not a concern about them. Mm-hmm. And this is true also with pasteurization, where people believe you have to pasteurize milk because it's dangerous. Pasteurization was used only to cover up the very degraded and contaminated milk that was produced industrially in cities, okay, where they were bringing cows into cities and feeding them beer slop, the leftover processing, leftover stuff from the beer factories. So the animals were ill, they were getting fed horribly, but they were still producing milk. And the milk they produced was very dangerous milk. Okay, people were getting sick. So the pasteurization was used to make industrial milk safe enough to sell. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, on the farmer side, where the normal dairies and people were producing raw milk or real milk, that milk was so important. It was being used by the Mayo Clinic as treatments for tuberculosis and for other things. Mm-hmm. Okay? And at the time, there were studies done in the 30s between they studied different orphanages, those that used raw milk and those that had pasteurized milk. The kids in the orphanages that used raw milk had no dental issues at all. All the cavities and all the dental problems were on the side where there was the pasteurized milk. Mm-hmm. So in our effort to sterilize everything and to believe that we can apply industrial methods to make ourselves safe, what we're doing is we're eliminating farmers who are producing the only safe food in the country. We're eliminating food that's enormously valuable. Real milk or raw milk has got bacteria in it that is protective against colon cancer, protective against allergies and asthma. It has calcium, vitamin D in it. I don't think most people know that once you kill the bacteria by pasteurization, you actually have no access to the calcium that's in the milk, right? Because you need that bacteria. It's the bacteria that help. I want to say digest. It's not
assimilate?
Really the right word.
Assimilate.
That's right. That's exactly right. You can't do it without the bacteria. That's what they help you with. And maybe people have seen the ads for Alcaseum Unitas. They advertise it for yogurts. Dannon has Alcaseum Unitas, and it's good for whatever, you know, your digestive system. Mm-hmm. Alcaseum Unitas, all it is lactobacillus, which is already in raw milk, mm-hmm. which is great for your digestive system. And most of your immune system is in your gut. 70% of your immune system is in your gut. And it's those little bacteria that are helping provide it to you. I know of people that who have animals that have chronic renal failure, mm-hmm. and there's actually probiotics or these little bugs that they can buy, as you know, in capsule form. They're not drugs, okay? They're probiotics because basically they're just bacteria. That little bacteria eats the creatine and the BUN that is produced when the kidneys can't function anymore, when they're losing their ability to function, then those two things get very high. It's very toxic for people or animals. The little bacteria eat it. Okay, so they basically the bacteria is doing part of helps do part of the work of the kidneys. Mm-hmm. But we are so germ frightened. We've been intentionally germ-frightened that we are sterilizing everything. Children have allergies and asthma and all of that, but not children that have animals and that are outside and playing in the dirt. There's tremendous immunity to be gained from that. From chickens, I mentioned to a farmer how, you know, people people believe if the chickens are outside, it's dangerous, you know, that they could get something, and this is how you can get diseases. And he said it's the exact opposite. If the chicken goes outside, they not only are getting sunlight, which is really good for them, but they're being exposed to different kinds of bacteria, so they build their immune system, gets very strong from that, and their eggs provide you with the immunity they built up by being outside, whereas the eggs of chickens that are in these giant poultry houses provide nothing besides the fact they've got, you know, they use antibiotics and they use GMO feeds and all of that. There's no immunity from those chickens because they have no immune system. They're exposed to nothing, all right, that would challenge their, in any normal way, challenge their immune system. So that's another example of the sort of false understanding people have about what creates safety. Mm-hmm. We think that we can sterilize things. We think an industrial system can help us. Michael, I'm sure a lot of people have heard of Michael Pollan. Michael Pollan says basically the industrial system has failed, and it's sickening us. And then progressive legislators believe that the answer to that is more industrialization, and that what they want to do is they want to industrialize farms as though they were meat processing plants, meat factories. And that's what NAIS is about. That's what these food safety bills are about. They are an entire industrialization of farms that will decide what feed they have to use, and it will be GMO, what medical regimens, and it will be drugs. It will be the products that these companies sell, and what sprays they have to apply. And right there, that's the end of organic.
So that's a guaranteed market.
Huh?
That's a guaranteed market for the large industry.
It's a guaranteed market. So the farmer is trapped on his farm, having to do things, comply with an endless series of what's called best farming practices. These horrible things I just mentioned are listed under best farming practices. Having to do that, knowing that it's destroying everything that he knows is reasonable for his animals and for his land. And if he doesn't comply, there is the penalties are like $500,000, up to $500,000, and 10 years in prison. $1,000 a day for not complying also. And so in that sense, he's trapped as an industrial worker with penalties that, I wrote an article about farmers, actually the literal enslavement of American farmers, because when you think about it, his only option is to stop farming. If he doesn't stop farming, he's a slave on his farm, controlled by these industrial masters. And that's not I don't think that's an extreme thing to say, because the penalties of 10 years in prison or $500,000 are enough to kill someone. They certainly are enough to destroy an entire family and destroy lives. And so I think they're comparable to whipping people. They are that severe in terms of the terror that they impose on that farmer. And you're exactly right. They would then be trapped as a captive market for purchasing these supplies they don't even want. But the industrial system has now not only gotten them to do what they want and to destroy organic farming and independent farming altogether, they've now created this market for their own stuff that's locked in by government police power. It's an amazing, it's just really amazing, and that's what these bills are. It's hard to describe how urgent it is that people contact legislators and say this has to be stopped. It's incredibly urgent, too, that people let their friends know how dangerous this is. This is really the takeover of the U.S. food supply by the industrial side. Everything people have wanted, you know, you like your local farmers, you like your local farmers' markets, you want roadside stands, all of those will be gone because they are the inspection, regulation, fees and licensing that is now coming down on farmers through this bill will make it so onerous and impossible that taking your food off the farm to take it to a market will not be worth it. And that's on the farmer's side, the inspection, the regulations, the paperwork, the computer work, the the having to file, the threats to you if you make any mistakes. The same thing is true for any transport equipment. So for Amish farmers, often that because they don't use trucks, they will offer hire somebody. They often hire somebody to bring their stuff to market. It's the same licensing, inspection, fees, computer work that's going to be required of the transport equipment, anybody with a transport equipment. Same thing will be required with anybody with harvesting equipment. Okay, and right now they, inside the FDA, which you should understand too, is these bills look very innocuous on the surface, and people don't realize that the dangerous parts of the bills are scattered in pieces throughout these different agencies. And even when you see them in the agency, you don't really know what it is because it's detached from the penalty part that's in another part of an agency or the operative part that's in another part of the agency. So, for example, in the FDA, buried in something under vegetables is something called sources of seed contamination, which I believe was written by Monsanto. And it's a very short list. It includes agricultural water. It includes manure. But it does not include chemical fertilizers or chemical pesticides. And it includes harvesting, transporting, and seed cleaning equipment and seed storage facilities. So I made the point about the chemical fertilizers because Monsanto produces chemical fertilizers and chemical pesticides and the manure. So obviously, right there you have, obviously, pesticides and fertilizers could easily contaminate anything as manure. And in fact, you could eat manure and you would be okay. Mm-hmm. You might get sick a little, but you couldn't eat pesticides or fertilizers and live. Okay, so the fact that these are listed as sources of contamination and they leave off something that's deadly gives you some indication of how perverted this is. Okay, so in that list of harvesting, transporting, and seed cleaning equipment this year is already illegal. Farmers that need to clean their seed in order to get back the seeds that they need to for the next season, or to produce seed for market, maybe it's only this year, it's only for market, they can't clean, I know a farmer who can't clean flax seed, he's cleaned for 40 years, he can't clean his flax seed and sell it in the market now because his equipment, which has never bothered anybody, and there's nothing on record of seed cleaning equipment ever infecting anything anywhere. But even so, it's listed and it's now illegal, or I should say it's now under these food safety regulations. So in order to use equipment, it has to meet these certification standards.
And those standards, where are those standards listed, in USDA or FDA?
I imagine that they're in the FDA because they're food safety. And see, that's why they're trying to bring the two, what these bills do is they bring the FDA and the USDA together. So basically the scattered policing of farming is being brought together to something much more powerful. And both agencies are immensely corrupted. So basically you're multiplying the corruption, giving them giant data banks, and giving them much more power. So the seed cleaning equipment, you can clean seed if you're a farmer. But to meet the certification requirements, you would need $1 million to $1.5 million building and equipment per line of seed. So for a CSA that has 30 kinds of seed, or for an organic seed company that's selling many, many, many kinds of seed, growing the seed and selling those seed, or for a farmer who's growing some of those seed for the seed company, mm-hmm. each of those places would need a building and equipment costing $1 million to $1.5 million for each kind of seed. So you have two kinds of corn. You would need two different kinds of buildings, mm-hmm. two buildings. So you can see right now that will eliminate, that just simply wipes, that's how this is being done. This is the game that's being played. It's how the HACCP stuff worked, okay, that they put out all these processors. It literally got wiped out all the local processors. This is going to wipe out all the farmers doing that. And the last thing that they listed was seed storage facilities, which is really a tip-off about seed banking and all the people that are working so hard to save biodiversity in seeds. same thing, the seed storage facilities, all they have to do is say you need a particular, you have to meet this certification, and it'll cost you $1 million, $2 million, $5 million. Believe me, they will have set it so that it's not possible. Okay? So farmers can't store the seeds in the mason jars, which they've done forever, in their sheds. Mm-hmm. Okay? They can't keep seeds. So even if they manage to buy the building, the million-dollar building, now they've got another build. Now they've got to do a something else for seed storage. They can't store these seeds in their jars, in their house or in their shed or in their wherever. And even the university programs that are there's one in Georgia, the Southern Seed Legacy. It's just a wonderful place. They've collected all these seeds with just the most wonderful names, like Granny's polka dot seeds or polka dot beans or all the old varieties of beans and beans and seeds. And they have only one requirement. It's amazing. You can get seeds from them for free, okay? If you want seeds, it's great. But when you grow them and you produce seeds afterwards, after your crop, you have to give them back a third. You keep a third, and you must share a third. This is the opposite of what the industrial side is like. This is not about making money. This is about keeping things alive. It's about making community, because they want those seeds out in the world being used by people, and all the methods of how to grow them being shared between people, and where they're kept alive. That they're really promoting keeping seeds alive and in use, so that we're not using a fewer and fewer number of commercial seeds. We're still using all the wonderful, wonderful heritage seeds that's our biologic heritage. And it's all that will be gone. All that will be gone. Okay, farmers markets, seed banking, and this is all through food safety. This is all where they've gotten things through food safety.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got about 3 minutes left here. Do you want to tell the listeners the names of the different legislation that we should be contacting our representatives about, or just contacting them about,
If they can't remember the numbers, I know that H.R. 875 is the giant one that brings together the USDA and FDA, but it's also, I think it's 814 is another one, and then there's one in the Senate, there are others in the Senate, and basically what they should do is they should say the food safety bills. And it wouldn't hurt to say that people know these are Monsanto-driven, they know that they're Clinton-driven, they know that they're Cargill-driven, and let them know that the only food safety this country has is in our farmers, in our independent farmers, that they're producing the only clean food in the entire country, and these are the people that are being eliminated.
Mm-hmm.
And that to tell their legislators that they see through this is a trick. It's a trick, and that the bailout was also a trick, and now they're going after food.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and we're having, first they took all our money, and now they're stealing the ground out from under us. That would be my recommendation, but I think they only need to say the food safety bills. I call them the fake food safety bills.
So we'd be asking our congressmen and senators to all vote down all the food safety bills.
And actually, I would hope they would call a halt to them. We actually withdraw them, particularly in New York, since they're coming out of New York.
Mm-hmm.
DeLauro, people should pound DeLauro to withdraw the bills. Right, she should get call after call after call that people are enraged, and her husband works for Monsanto. I mean, it's absurd. I shouldn't say it's absurd. It's obscene. It's obscene. It's immoral. Okay, these are people. This is our lives that's being stolen away, and our democracy. Kissinger said, "Control food, you control people." Okay, if the industrial system gets control of the food system, industrial side, they will do what Monsanto did in the Midwest recently, which is after the floods when the farmers were wiped out, they raised the price of corn seed by $100 a bag because they had total monopoly. They can provide food or not provide it to us. We will be helpless democratically. We will be helpless. This is a democracy, a fundamental democracy issue. Country that doesn't have control over its own food, an independent control over its food, is not a democracy anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We would be controlled by multinational corporations deciding who gets food and when and at what price.
Lynn, could you recommend some videos about these kind of issues for the listeners to check out?
Oh, that's a good idea. The World According to Monsanto is an amazing movie. Future of Food is really good. And there's a new one out in India called Poison on the Platter, which is about genetic engineering of the food. The World According to Monsanto may be the best in the sense that it really gives a sense of the mafia tactics and the corruption involved. And it talks about what happened during the Clinton period, and it talks about what's happening to farmers around the world. It gives a whole global picture of what this company's doing, and people should realize the bills that are in Congress right now are driven by Monsanto and the big meat packers, and those are the big meat packers, and those are the ones that have brought us the contamination we've got and are actively bringing us more with the industrial chemical crops and, you know, and pharmaceutical drug crops and lowering inspection standards.
Mm-hmm.
HACCP, the inspections immediately dramatically dropped off as soon as they put this food safety plan into action.
Well, and any books you'd recommend for the listeners?
The World According to Monsanto is now a book, and I'm trying to think. Oh, Seeds of Deception by Jeffrey Smith.
And he'll be a guest on our program the 25th of March.
Oh, that's
so
great.
That should be exciting.
That's great. And then you might have others. This food safety stuff, I don't have. There are no books. This is really a desperate warning to people. I mean, basically the left needs to wake up. Everybody that cares about food needs to wake up really fast. These bills have to be stopped. So there's not books out on it, and we don't have time. There's no time. Hopefully we will stop these bills, and then there'll be time to write about the effort of the industrial side. Basically, this is a coup. And that a coup was stopped. I hope that will be the story that's told, that a coup over our food system was stopped. But no, I don't know books about, you know, I don't think the Clintons have been exposed about this well enough.
Mm-hmm.
Just Jeffrey Smith's book would be probably really good.
Well, go ahead.
I was going to say there are books about globalization and that would be good because this is the danger of, you know, NAFTA, CAFTA, Codex, all of the international IMF, World Bank harmonizing schemes, and Smart Grid is part of that. Those would all be useful for people to get a big picture of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Anything by Frances Moore LePay, she runs a group called A Small Planet, and she talks about the connection between that. There's no shortage of food in the world, she says. There's only a shortage of democracy. Only the places where there's a shortage of democracy do you see any food issues. But where you have democratic countries, there's no issue of adequate amounts of food. It's only distribution. It's only because things are so corrupt. And that's what we're looking at right now. That's what we're looking at happening here.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Anything else that you'd like to mention before we wrap it up today?
I can't urge people enough to let other people know, and you can tell them. I don't remember where you said that you upload this. You'll upload this radio broadcast.
Oh, you'll be able to download this later from radio4all.net, radio4all.net, and I'll be sending you a link to it once it's uploaded.
Okay, so then that would be something people could share with friends and let them know how dire this is. And that Michael Pollan's comments on the industrial system is that basically progressive legislators are wanting to apply greater industrialization to an industrial system that failed because it's industrial already and it's making us sick. And then the answers they come up with are more of the same. And he's very clear that this will get rid of farmers. This is going to destroy our small farmers. So I guess that's basically it. This is very clear what's going to happen. And this is not a solution to food safety and was never meant to be a solution to food safety. The only solution to food safety is that we have many, 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 many more farmers across this country, small local farmers. Then you know who you're getting your food from. If there's ever an outbreak, it's easily contained. Everybody knows exactly where that food came from. It didn't get very far into the food system. We don't have a giant centralized system. Mm-hmm. And often when you know the person, you know yourself that the farm is clean. You know what you're getting. You know it's healthy. You know it's real. And that's the way to be safe in terms of food, and that's the only way to be safe. There is no other way to do it. But they're taking away the part that makes you safe.
Lynn Cohen-Cole, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you very much, Peter. I really appreciate it, and I hope that people will let other people know. Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Bye.
And that was our guest, Lynn Cohen-Cole. I can't thank her enough for coming on and helping to spread the word about these issues that affect all of us because we all eat food. Next, we will hear the audio from